Always a rush to talk to NBA insider and contributor Bill Herenda, who's, I guess, doing shows from Syracuse to San Francisco. You've become in demand. I mean, how many markets do you appear in?
You know what, Dave? Thanks, number one, for the gracious invitation to chat yet again. Always a pleasure to be with you. And you know what, Dave? It kind of ebbs and flows. You know, those markets that you mentioned to SB Nation Radio, which kind of has a nationwide footprint. Sacramento has been another market where I've, you know, maintained, you know, some dialogue with frequency. So, yeah, so from that standpoint, you know, it's always fun to get different perspectives from different markets and just to kind of dip in and chat and figure out what's going on. So it's always a lot of fun.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Nobody really cared until you appeared on my podcast a year ago. And then things really took off for you.
Oh, well, yeah, that was definitely that was definitely it. I was under a rock before that day, for sure.
And it's also true, your wife looks at you differently now that you've been on the podcast, that you've become
definitely
more desirable.
Yes.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. So we didn't think that was possible, but it's true.
Hey, as we get into this series, the Warriors prohibitive favorites, you have to bet $280 to win 100. So most folks are picking Golden State to win. Is the only way the Raptors can win is if Kawhi Leonard has an out-of-body experience?
No, I don't think so, Dave. I think, you know, to me, defense is always paramount. There's no question about that. But I am concerned about the Raptors' offensive firepower, and do they have enough? Because I think that balance is key in today's game. And to beat the Warriors, you know, you've got to score. Now, if you look at Toronto in the playoffs, they're 2-5 when they allow 100 or more points. And, you know, Golden State is averaging, you know, 115 in the regular season, and also they're in the playoffs as well. So from that standpoint, well, they average 117 regular season, 115 in the Western Conference Finals, 117 overall in the playoffs. So I think that, you know, Kawhi is definitely a special player, but he is certainly going to need help, whether it's, again, Fred VanVleet shooting, you know, 80% off the bench over his last three games, 14 of 17, to Norman Powell. Remember, the Raptors are 9-0 in the regular season and playoffs when he scores 15 or more, 4-0 in the postseason since 2016. When he scores 15 or more. But I think Kawhi is going to need more for the Raptors to be successful.
Do you think defensively they can cause some problems for the Warriors because they've got some guys who are interchangeable that can defend multiple positions? I know you've been on Siakam for years going back to, you know, doing college games. Serge Ibaka, also a very good defender, and of course Kawhi.
Yeah, I think so, Dave. I think that's certainly to their advantage. I think there's been a lot of talk, and rightfully so, about over-switching in the NBA. And that's a topic for another time, but I think you raise a great point in that, yes, these guys can guard multiple positions. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, Yubi Brown has been big on their small lineup when they go with Leonard at the four, Powell at the three, VanVleet at the shooting guard position, and then Lowry at the point. So, again, of course, we know the Warriors can go small, so I think there'll be some interesting dynamics there. So I think they can, you know, cause some defensive problems for Golden State. However, I think what's really key for Toronto is to shoot a high percentage. Okay, because if you do that, you're making Golden State take the ball out of the net. You're setting your defense. You may get to the free throw line more frequently, get into the bonus earlier, get Golden State into foul trouble. And I think those things are certainly going to be big for Toronto to kind of, in other words, sometimes your best defense starts with selective, patient, intelligent offense.
Which means someone like Danny Green is going to have to start making some shots finally.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, for Nick Nurse, that's going to be a big decision. You know, Danny Green, it's very ironic, Dave. Second in the NBA, 46.5% from three during the regular season, and 19% in the Eastern Conference Finals, 28% on corner threes, and 75% of his shots are coming from three-point range. A lot of this data that I'm sharing comes from John Schumann at NBA.com. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Green produces. You know, can a guy who shoots 47% from downtown during the regular season, how long until he bounces back? It'll be very interesting, but that certainly will be a boon because I think along with Gasol, they need offensive production from, you know, guys like that, not to mention Ibaka. And it's a team that really goes, you know, just eight deep with that eight-man rotation.
Do you think offensively they can create some problems with their matchups on that front court? I like Siakam and Ibaka, and Gasol can obviously step out and knock in a three, that they can create some problems with the Warriors in the front court.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think just taking a step back as well, you know, the Warriors hovered around the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency during the regular season, finishing 11th in defensive efficiency, first in offensive efficiency. But Toronto, Boston, and Milwaukee, top 10 for the season in offensive rating and defensive rating. So I think what folks will recognize, if they haven't seen Toronto much during the regular season, is that, you know, these guys are tough. I mean, you know, listen, they were down 2-0 to the Bucks. They trailed by 15 with 2:18 to go in the third quarter, 39-18 run to finish off Milwaukee in Game 6 in their closeout game. The dramatics, of course, with Kawhi Leonard with his buzzer beater to beat the Sixers in Game 7. So, you know what, Dave? Yeah, I think they can cause some issues. You know, I think, you know, Gasol is one of these guys who's, you know, a big that can pass, is on the perimeter. You know, just 22 of 28 of his threes have come at home. He struggled on the road. Siakam, you know, has been, you know, terrific here in the playoffs. But again, you know, he's only shooting 59% in the restricted area, shot 71% there in the regular season. So he has been good and solid. But again, it'll be a tough test, I think, against the Warriors.
Do you have any extra juice in terms of enthusiasm for the series because we don't have LeBron and the Cavaliers year after year facing Golden State? Just something different.
Well, I would say for me personally, regardless of who's in the finals, I'm jacked for it, Dave. You know, so, you know, I'm not necessarily missing LeBron. It's like, you know, if you're in the mood for Mexican food, you're going to love it and enjoy it. And you may not miss the Indian food or the Chinese food that you love as well. So it just so happens that these finals present these players at this specific point in time. I do regret that Durant is injured, that Cousins is injured. We may see both here in the series. And Ananobi had, you know, the appendectomy. So he's been out. Maybe we'll see him for Toronto. So I do regret that we don't have players at full strength. Unfortunately, that's part of the game. And for LeBron, sure, it'd be great to see LeBron in the finals, but I'm as immersed in this as any finals, just because it's the finals.
You mentioned Durant, and he's traveling with the team, but ruled out for Game 1, hasn't been cleared to practice yet. How much of a factor can he be in the series at all, even if he does get on the court some?
That's a great question. I don't think anyone really knows, and every injury is different. Every guy is different. I will say this, though. It just seems as though Kerr and his staff, they just seem to have the Midas touch with, you know, integrating players back into the lineup, whether it's after injury or layoff. And I think we saw that as the bench was tightened against Houston, and now they went 12 deep against Portland. So from that standpoint, I would just be optimistic that he would be able to contribute, but we'll have to see. And again, David, it's kind of a gray area because you just never know how guys are going to bounce back from injury. But I would just be optimistic given the Warriors' history and Durant's history.
Do you think winning the championship will impact his decision to stay or go either way, or if he plays in the finals?
You know, I think it will. And in a similar vein, I think with Leonard on the other side of the court, Dave, too. I mean, I think sometimes you recognize that it's difficult to win. It's tough to get to the finals. And perhaps this will – I mean, listen, it'll certainly give Durant a clear vision of what he would be leaving behind if he does indeed leave. Because this is rarefied air, right? 5 straight finals, it would be 4 in 5 years and a three-peat. And even for Leonard to say, hey, this is working, We've gotten to the finals. You know, we didn't think we thought Paul George maybe would leave Oklahoma City and come back to Southern California. That didn't happen. But with Leonard as well, I think winning has an effect on decision-making. I don't think there's any question about that. You kind of know what you have here. And then it's some of the destinations being bandied about, whether it's Brooklyn, who's further along, the Knicks, or the Clippers, who are further along. Obviously, there'd be a little bit more work to do if those guys decide on those types of destinations.
There's just that narrative with the Warriors being better without Durant. They won five in a row without him playing. And if they go on to win the championship and he doesn't play, and Chris Broussard put it out there last week, that the titles he won are tarnished because he was already on a good team, and see, here they go again. You know, maybe it's the impetus to go and try it somewhere else.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. And I could certainly understand that perspective to prove that you can join an established winning team, contribute to their sustaining their success. And now, you know, it's time to, you know, start a new chapter and bring a new franchise along and try to get another franchise, you know, into the championship conversation. So I could totally understand that and appreciate that. And certainly I think the Warriors are better with Durant. They're different, but again, I'm not buying, the talk where some people say, well, they're better without him. I just think they're different without him.
The bench wasn't used much against Houston, was used extensively against Portland. Do you see a lot of subs getting into this series for Golden State?
You know, I would think so. I think, you know, obviously each game takes on a personality all its own, as will the series. And in my keys at the eponymous webpage, BillHorrenda.com, where I kind of break down the series, you know, successful adjustments are keys for both teams, whether it's in-game and in-between games. But I think here that we will see a deeper bench, perhaps maybe not as deep as against Portland where you went 12 guys, but I think so. And I think Toronto's roster and the matchup lend itself to the Warriors going a bit deeper in their bench, certainly than they did against Houston.
Give me a series prediction.
I think the Warriors win this in six, Dave. I think they finish it in the last game at Oracle Arena. And I think Toronto, you know, here are my Warriors keys, okay? When you look at it, no egalitarian defense. Leonard, Lowry, and Siakam account for 61% of Toronto's points. Bench play will be vital. Van Vliet, Powell, and Ibaka, 21% of Toronto's points. Low turnovers. Toronto's ninth in the league, regular season, points off turnovers, 17 per game. And also, the transition game is going to be big. Golden State was third in the league in fast break points at 19 a night. Toronto fourth at 18.4 per night. And I think here for the Warriors and for Toronto and anyone in playoff basketball, what's the cardinal rule? Controlling your defensive board, according to Hubie Brown. So I think that's going to be vital. But I do like the Warriors here in six to get it done. I just don't think Toronto has enough firepower offensively. And it's going to be tough also. You know, you look at the Warriors, they're the most improved team offensively in the postseason. And again, they were number one offensive rating during the regular season, and their defense has improved in every round. I think they take it in six.
So Drake leaves Oracle in tears.
Well, I don't think he's going to leave going back to a game seven. I'll say that.
Fair enough. Hey, let's get into a couple other things going around the league. Latest news out of Houston, they may be willing to trade anybody with the exception of James Harden. That includes Chris Paul, who's got a bunch of money left in his deal, 3 years, $124 million. Is that the kind of team that maybe just needs a piece or two, or would you blow it up?
Well, I think the reality of it is that, you know, no one is untradeable. And I think what they've got now may not be enough in the Western Conference. So I respect Morey for, you know, looking to shake it up and change it. You know, I'm not sure how much and how many pieces need to be moved. But you make a good point with Chris Paul. You know, he's 34 years old now. And at that money, it could be tough to move him. But I think you have to look at Toronto as an example. Now, the only players remaining from the team that made the conference finals in 2016, Lowry and Powell. And, of course, Usai Ujiri made the trade to take Kawhi Leonard off San Antonio's hands, and I say that lightly, but you know that was a major trade that has paid off. Maybe in the short term, maybe not in the long term if he moves on. But I respect the fact that changes may need to be made to get to the next level, and I think Toronto's an example of that. And you've had a lot of roster turnover. Nick Nurse, of course, took over for Dwayne Casey. That was very controversial as well, that firing. So it's a dynamic world that we live in. And I think that definitely, you know, I think Morey will evaluate different offers and we'll see how much change there really is in Houston. But I think some is definitely warranted.
Oh, Toronto also moving Valanciunas for Gasol during the year. So another move in the middle.
Yeah, exactly, Dave, exactly. So, and, you know, and look at Milwaukee had great acquisitions, you know, with Hill is one that comes to mind, and Mirotic, et cetera. So, Ilyasova. So, you know, not to mention Robin Lopez, right, who was a free agent, picked up very inexpensively last summer. So, yeah, so it's a dynamic world that we live in, and you know, I also kind of look at coaching from a standpoint that, you know, yes, I think sometimes it is tough to hold guys' attention for many years. But by the same token, if ownership and management and the coaching staff, if they are aligned, sometimes you're better off with the coaching staff that you have and changing the personnel around it. I think quite often we see more of the coaching carousel than roster maneuvering. But there are examples of, you know, look at Brooklyn, what a terrific job they've done. And again, different end of the spectrum, right? Just getting back into the playoffs. But I think there are examples of franchises that certainly have been able to upgrade their talent, ultimately their wins. And again, there are only really four ways to improve. It's the draft, free agency, trades, and skill development. So I think you have to be really keen on all four of those levels to get better.
You wouldn't reevaluate how you do things because you see them jacking up 53s and saying the analytics show that, you know what, just score a basket. And we saw last year in the conference finals when they missed the 27 threes in a row, hey, just score. Don't rely on penetrate, pitch out, isolate, kick out for a three.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, Dave, here's the thing. You look at the numbers and the shots per possession, the highest shots per possession, the free throw line, the restricted area, the corner three, the above the arc threes, and then finally the tough twos in the mid-range game. Now, Frank Vogel, new coach of the Lakers, also added to this on ESPN Radio down in L.A. that, of course, the open shot trumps the contested shot. So I think what the playoffs have revealed to us, and I think you're spot on, is that when it's crunch time, getting points are vital. And it's also, I understand that your identity is to attack the rim, kick it for three. But then what it boils down to is when you have nothing, okay, what do you have? What can you run in the half court set? And it's like, again, you'd be around the test of coaching. Can you get your closer or your top three guys high percentage shots in their best areas versus NED? And I think what we're seeing is that at different key critical times of games that you're right, we're not seeing simply getting points. We're seeing trying to go for the three or just a bad, you know, that tough two mid-range jumper. So I think that's something that we can all learn from. And I think it's been highlighted in this postseason that you're right. There are times where you just have to get points.
A team that didn't score enough points this year, the Lakers, and certainly so much drama surrounding them over the last couple of weeks, the comments made by Magic Johnson being undermined allegedly by the GM Rob Pelinka. With so much controversy surrounding the franchise, would a top-tier free agent want to even go there?
I still think so. I still think so. And, you know, I think there's any organization has a certain level of dysfunction. You know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, this obviously, and again, I'll add the caveat, Dave, I'm not with the team. I'm not in their practice facility. I'm not covering them on a daily basis. But I do think that any organization, as good as it looks externally, has its own internal dysfunction. And it's unfortunate when it gets kind of aired out in a public way, and whether it's true, to what degree it's true and what have you. And of course, I don't condone, any type of, workforce treatment of workers that's not good. But I think players will look at this and think about Los Angeles playing with a LeBron. Like, Kyrie Irving, for example. I think if he wants to play with LeBron again, I don't think the scuttlebutt around the Lakers is going to stop him from doing that. I think they'll still be able to attract a top flight free agent. And again, it's just one of these deals. And George Karl mentioned this on Fox Sports Radio recently. There's a lot of noise over the summer, and you kind of have to be impervious to it. And the most strides the Lakers are going to make will be in the gym, whether it's summer league, training camp, and certainly free agency in the draft, and maybe some trades too, of course. But I think they'll be able to overcome kind of this negative publicity that they've been subjected to.
You're always great on basketball. Hey, give us the thumbnail sketch about life in Hollywood. And obviously you have no regrets because you got this great attitude and you're kind of bouncing off the walls about the whole experience becoming a sports announcer who's also an actor.
Yeah, you know what, David? Just about following the ball. I think, from some of the work, like with the SWAT episode and Spring Breakaway and, in between, the many auditions, it's been a great experience just continuing to, hone some skills and hustle and pound the pavement and audition. And it's really similar to, I think, to playing in many ways and to broadcasting in that you're always, striving to get better. Certain games are better than others, and just kind of moving on to the next opportunity, to the next audition, to the next commercial, to the next show, or what have you. So there are many parallels between them, which is a lot of fun.
Well, there's such a great life lesson too, that you're never too old to get started with something. You're never too old to learn or get better. We get set in our ways, 30, 40, with our careers and lives. And to go out and put yourself out there is really an inspiration to folks of all ages.
Sure. I mean, look at, Hubie Brown, for example, is in his mid-80s. And, Richard Deitch had a great column recently, catching up with UB up in Toronto, where Deitch is based. And of course, UB's going to be up there as well for the NBA Finals. But he's always trying to stay current and improve and what have you in his mid-80s. So, yeah, certainly I think there's an ability to appreciate the chase, appreciate the grind, and also the recognition that, the minute you think for me, the minute you think you know anything, you're way behind the eight ball. But there's always more to learn, more to understand about the game, about acting, about roles, or what have you. And it just reminds me of my neighborhood in New Jersey, with the street signs, no stopping, no standing. So I think continually trying to learn, improve, get better is key. And also, it's a lot of fun. I happen to be fortunate, I think, I really enjoy the chase in whatever it is. I really enjoy the process. And I think if you have that ability and that drive and that desire, I think you'll be fine. And I think sometimes it's just a matter of finding where that truly is for people. Because once you have it and you know what it is, then it's not really like work at all. You're just kind of getting after it and thankful for each day for the opportunity to just be to be pursuing it.
Every time I talk to you, I feel like packing my car and heading down and following you to make it happen. You are such an inspiration, Bill. Always enjoy the visit.
No, my pleasure, Dave. Anytime.
You can follow our guest at Bill Herenda on Twitter, BILLHERENDA, or his website, BillHerenda.com.